you hosted a hell of a party last weekend.
Indeed I did.
It was great.
I don't know why you're surprised.
I'll tell you what surprised me is that you invited somebody with bird flu.
Oh. Okay, everyone. Greg's sick this week, so obviously we have to hear him bitch and moan about it.
I don't take being sick well. I am a gigantic baby when it comes to getting a cold.
Well, I was talking about this with a coworker of mine. She was wondering, she's a female. Yeah. She's one of those females.
Okay.
You've been reading about in all the papers.
Mm-hmm.
And she was wondering, like, why do men take being sick so poorly? And I was like, we're just not as strong as you. You guys have babies. And men are fragile little babies themselves who can't handle their own mortality. So whenever we get sick, we just cry and whimper and just kind of curl up into a ball.
Yeah, it's... Excuse me while I clear my throat. I think it has to do with perceptions of masculinity, because I was a hockey player a while ago.
Yes.
And of course, the credo is you always play hurt. You always power through it. Mm. And when your body's betraying you like this...
That's the same. That's the trademark of the NFL, isn't it? Play hurt.
Play hurt. Well, play brain dead. It's a little bit more...
Concussion? NFL, what's that?
NFL speed, yeah. NHL, you play hurt.
Yes.
A couple of players are getting their brains scrambled into guacamole, but they also play with broken legs, no teeth.
You know. It's worth it
for your
billion-dollar slave owners. Aren't sports great?
John, let's not go that far, okay? They're getting a world-class education in African-American studies at UNC Chapel Hill.
I don't think
I'm not going to let that one go, guys.
Let's bring up Baylor. Let's talk about Baylor, my favorite school.
Yeah, great. I'm so glad I love college football. You guys make it so easy to root for it. John, let's get as far away from this topic. We don't want to, you know, bring the discourse down.
No, of course not. Actually, no. I have the perfect thing we can talk about.
Okay, what is it? An antidote? Is it an antidote to my illness and to this negative discussion we're having?
Possibly. I discovered a treasure map.
Ooh.
It'll lead us to buried treasure. Let's go. Let's go on an adventure. Let's go. Dude. Oh, wait. Here's the treasure. It's right here.
Okay, great.
All right. We're going to crack it open. It's a box set of the Goonies.
John, don't give the game away.
You wanted me to really stretch that out?
No, I didn't want you to play your hand so quickly. Because we have never seen the Goonies before this. The reason being, we are not 80s kids. We are
hashtag 90s.
Yeah,
I've had friends ask me, like, how have you made it 30 years without having seen the Goonies?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we're not little babies. We are no longer children.
No, and, you know, we had Disney classics filling our VCR rotation. And the Goonies was not included in them. For reasons that we will see why. Thank you, Mom and Dad.
Okay, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think that I am immune to nostalgia. I'd like to think that the stuff I enjoyed as a kid still kind of holds up, at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of the stuff I recognize that I watched as a kid is garbage. Transformers was garbage.
Well,
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles... It's pretty bad.
Okay.
So I like to think that the movies we watched as kids held up a little bit better than usual. Like, we watched a lot of Disney classics. We watched Aladdin. We watched Babe. Babe was another heavy rotation movie of ours.
Mm-hmm. Even the TV we watched.
The
Adventures of Superman, the Batman animated series, Animaniacs. I guess we like to think these are higher quality kids programming than, say, what kids look at today.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you feel the same way? Do you feel like...
I think I do as part of an ego trip. I think if I actually revisited these things, one thing I wanted to look back at being a product of the 90s is I wanted to revisit Space Jam, unfortunately I didn't have time this week, but if the Goonies is Space Jam, or Space Jam is the Goonies for kids of a certain age as well, kids about 10 years younger.
I mean,
and so I wanted to revisit that film, which I haven't seen in a decade plus, and kind of evaluate whether whether I'm looking blindly at that piece of entertainment the way some people are maybe looking blindly at the quality of the Goonies.
Yeah, because let's just get to it. The Goonies is garbage. This is a bad movie.
It's not garbage.
I think it's garbage.
What it is I don't think it's garbage, because I think it's a very partially a well-made film by Richard Donner.
It is directed by Richard Donner.
Yeah, so it's a quality director.
And produced by Steven Spielberg, written by Chris Columbus when he had a little bit of artistic integrity left.
John, we'll speak to Pixels later, okay? Okay. But to call it garbage, that's a bit much. I wouldn't throw this on the trash heap. What it is empty. What I thought this was just straight sugar water.
I will give it this. Mm-hmm. It captures a certain essence and spirit of being a kid, which is to say, being annoying as shit. Just like talking over each other and screeching, and just it really captures that really well. However, it's annoying as hell, and it's unwatchable.
John, do you okay? Unwatchable? I won't go that far.
Okay, yeah, you're right. It's not completely unwatchable.
Perhaps we should get to the cast, because this has a dynamite cast.
It does have a dynamite cast, but it's all early days when they hadn't honed their skills quite yet.
Yeah, the movie stars Sean Astin as Mikey.
Samwise Gamgee.
Yes, him too, yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, I think a fine actor in his own right. Mm-hmm. In this performance, he was 13 at the time, had braces, maybe could have gone back one more speech class or two, because he can't quite articulate his lines, can he?
Well, the other thing, too, is the movie's doing them no favors, because, again, it turns all these kids, they're all one-dimensional.
That's true. We see the same traits over and over again. If you want to talk about annoying characters, I mean, God bless you if you like Chunk. Played by Jeff Cohen. Goddamn, I could not watch him.
So Mikey's one characteristic is he has an inhaler, and he's got asthma and all these allergies. He's just not built for adventure.
Yeah, he's protected by his mother.
And then he has an older brother played by Josh Brolin.
Who I thought was actually probably the best part of this movie.
Yeah, he's quite good. Also, I'm surprised at how young he is. Because, I don't know, he's one of those actors I always just picture as an old man. Like, to see him this young, it kind of threw me off.
Well, yeah, how old was he when he, in this performance?
See, this movie came out in 85. In his 20s, but he's, like, playing a teenager.
No, he wasn't in his 20s. He was 16 when this movie filmed.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
Born in 1968. I'm assuming this was filmed in 1984. Came out in 85,
okay.
So yeah.
All right. Okay, gotcha. All right, fair enough.
But he's the only actor in this movie that doesn't overplay his hand.
Yeah.
I guess, or he tries to play it cool, and, you know, I that leads to one of the funny moments in the movie is when his brother goes off on an adventure. He's obviously responsible for him with his mother out, so he steals a little girl's bike.
Yeah, so the kids escape, and to make sure that Brand doesn't follow them, they deflate
Brand
his tires.
Being Josh Brolin's character.
Yes. And, all right, yeah. That's
yeah, you want to know why we're all over the place? Because this movie is all over the place. Like, everyone's shouting, everyone's talking over each other. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
but again, that kind of captures the spirit of being a kid. It's like not being able to focus for like 2 seconds.
I guess you're right, maybe.
Maybe that's why people connect to this movie so much.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's the same reason why kids love like Smurf movies and shit like that. It's sure. Like, what do the kids find interesting about these little minions that just kind of like run around and ruin adult people's lives? I wonder.
Who knows?
We also have Jeff Cohen as Chunk, who is the fat one.
Yeah.
You're reminded of he is the fat one because he's always hungry and distracted by food.
And will always vocalize that hunger in a piercing, screeching,
also
just overall charming way.
They also make a point that he's Jewish a lot.
Do
like,
they?
That's inherently funny. Did you
miss
that? Are you kidding me? Did
no,
you
I
miss
missed,
that?
I remember his last name was Cohen. I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember anything else about him being Jewish.
He makes a point that Mikey's attic is way cooler because his attic's full of Hanukkah stuff.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, and when he's talking about the bullet holes, he says they're the size of matzo balls. Are you kidding? Did you miss this?
Yes, because all of them are talking over each other. Again, I just shut him out. He is so, you know, Sean Astin and Josh Brolin have gone on to great careers, and I think rightfully. Jeff Cohen, God bless him. I'm sure he's a really nice guy. I could see why he had no career after this.
Oh, hold on. Okay, hold on. Let's not assume, because again, like a bunch of these kid actors didn't go on to like bigger things, but maybe sometimes they just didn't feel like going into acting.
Okay.
Just fine.
All right.
I think it's hard for sensible civilians like us to be like, why would you give up fame and glory and the glamour of Hollywood? But sometimes, you know, you just don't want to do that.
Sure, yeah, it was under his own volition that he didn't get hired again.
You know what? Screw you. You don't know his life.
No,
you don't know his story.
No, but this is a supremely annoying performance, and I hate it. I hated Chunk. I'm sorry.
It's Chunk. I just saw the most amazing thing of my entire life. First, you gotta do the truffle shuffle. Come on, do it. Come on, do it.
Speaking of annoying performances, mm-hmm. Corey Feldman, aka the remaining Corey.
Oh. Again, elevating the discourse here at Aspiring Snobs.
He plays Mouth, who is like the cool one.
Yes.
He's like
he's
smart.
He's combing his hair.
Yep.
That guy can't miss it. You got to telegraph everything about these characters.
Yeah.
And he's called Mouth because he's a smart aleck.
Yeah. He's cracking wise. Always sarcastic. Yeah. He's mm-hmm. the cool one. Hey.
But also was an expert in Spanish, which...
Yeah, that was also kind of surprising. Shouldn't they have hired someone who was Hispanic so maybe they had a reason for why he was fluent in Spanish?
No, John. and introduce some women into our T-Man Women Haters Club? I don't think so. Only white men are allowed to adventure. Okay?
Greg, I said a Hispanic, not a woman.
Okay, well, I thought some color in this cast could have helped.
What are you talking about? We have Data.
Oh, yeah.
A.K.A. Short Round.
Yes, that actor's name is...
Jonathan Kee Kwan.
Yes.
A.K.A. Short Round. Because yeah. all I could think about was Short Round.
Fun fact, he's actually Vietnamese. But
yes, but he's Chinese in this movie for yeah. some reason, because, mm-hmm. again, Hollywood's racist.
Yeah. And again, giving just wonderful line deliveries.
Well, the weird thing about... Okay. So he's playing a little stereotypical. Let's just admit that.
Oh, really?
Just a little bit.
Because his performance at Short Round was so nuanced. I mean.
But the kind of
it's unexpected.
The little extra dimension they give him is the fact that he's obsessed with James Bond.
Yeah, and when so really he's more obsessed with Q because he's
yeah he invents all these little gadgets and stuff like that, and that helps throughout the adventure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, again, it's still kind of stereotypical because like he's Asian naturally, he's brainy. So
and yeah, you expect yeah. Again, when you think of culturally, when you think of Japan and like the cities of Beijing and Shanghai, you see neon lights and you think, oh, technological advancement.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, not exactly a nuanced portrayal of the Chinese there.
It's all just one big country. It's called Asia, right? Yeah. It's just one big country.
John, are we expecting too much from a kid's film?
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay.
No.
Now, why not?
Why should we talk down to our children?
That's a good point. Now, yeah, is this a form of talking down, though, when we don't? When we have kind of one trait for each character,
mm-hmm.
very little in the way of arcs or progression for them.
Well, that's the biggest problem with this movie. I found,
mm-hmm.
which is this movie is all payoff and no setup.
Yeah, it's all about sensation.
Yeah, and it's all about kind of giving you those kind of big moments, but it didn't do anything to kind of earn them.
Absolutely not.
Yeah,
that is this movie's problem. When I say it's not garbage, but when I say it's empty, I mean it's literally living all in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Every character is pitched at 10 out of 10. Again, explaining their overtrait, like there's no progression, like there's no happiness followed by sadness, followed by anger, followed by like redemption or anything like that. There's nothing like that. It's all like in the moment, like wow, look at this, wow, next thing, wow,
yeah,
next thing.
They
like,
just keep chugging along.
Yeah,
it's like going along this adventure, and the problem is, the set pieces don't really change that much.
Well, no, the production design doesn't. I mean,
yeah. So they find a treasure map.
Yeah. Well, John, let's start. Let's go through the plot, I guess.
Oh yeah, because it's so complicated, people won't be able to follow along unless mm-hmm. we go into the details. Mikey's house is foreclosing.
No, John. Let's start at the very beginning.
Oh,
we
great.
Start
okay, fine. Yes, please. Let's.
We start where all children's films should: a prison.
And a prisoner has hung himself.
Yes. It's time that they're unleashing the they're letting out the prisoners for lunch. One of the prisoners is missing. The guard goes into the cell and sees a man hanging.
Mm-hmm.
He appears to have committed suicide, but it's actually an act.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the guy is faking his hanging. He knocks out the guard, runs outside to his brother, his crime syndicate family. His brother and his mother.
Yep. His brother's played by Joey Pants.
Mm-hmm. The great Joey Pants.
Joey Pantaleone.
Joe Pantaleone as well. Yeah.
No, that's who I'm referring
to. Oh, okay. All right. Sorry,
what do you think I'm talking about?
Who was the lady? She was in Don't Throw Mama from the Train.
Correct. The lady's name is Anne Ramsey.
Anne Ramsey. Yes, played by the great Joey Pantaleone. How do you pronounce his last name?
Joey Pantaleone.
Joey Pantaleone. Let's go on. Anyway, a chase ensues.
Mm-hmm.
The music
this is
nice
our
in this.
Quick introduction to all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're all in the middle of their little vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
Chunk is playing at an arcade game with pizza and a milkshake.
Because
he's fat.
Data is playing with his gadgets.
Mm-hmm.
There's a girl digging crabs out of a barrel, like an oil drum. Who was that? I thought she was part of the Goonies. And turns out, yeah, she was nobody.
Yeah, exactly. It's just to show it's a fishing town, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so here's the interesting thing you brought up earlier off mic. This is supposed to take place in Oregon?
Yes. I actually do think they make great use of the Pacific Northwest.
I thought it took place in Maine.
Well, I mean,
how the hell does a Spanish galleon get into the Pacific Ocean?
Okay, yes. we're not introduced to Mikey. He's laid up at home.
Mm-hmm.
Because his mother is a little overprotective.
Mm-hmm.
He's with his older brother, Josh Brolin, and this aspect of the film I did like is their little relationship, because their house is being foreclosed on, but they still kind of maintain a nice fraternal relationship, I guess. His older brother is supportive, and...
I guess. Okay.
You didn't buy it, John?
No, it just seemed like a normal, typical, like, Hollywood older brother, younger brother dynamic.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, I didn't think there was anything, like, it was just, like... older brother rolling his eyes at his younger brother. That's it. And the only reason he was protective is because his mom was like asked him to be.
I guess you're right.
Yeah, he just felt responsible because he knew he was going to get in trouble if he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that there was like something deeper. Like, oh, these two brothers. How sweet.
Okay, I thought it was sweet. I identified with it a little bit.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah. Again, I'm trying to find little things that I liked. I'm trying to stay positive here.
Good luck.
But in any event, their home is getting foreclosed on, and it's about to, their home is about to be bulldozed to make room for a country club,
mm-hmm.
and a golf resort.
And they need to clean up the home before it's bulldozed over. Mm-hmm. And to help with this, we get a little aside with a Spanish-speaking cleaner. That was hilarious, wasn't it? She doesn't understand English.
She doesn't understand English. Mouth being a little smartass that he is. Translates into Spanish a lot of horrible things.
And she still goes along
with it. This is the room, this is the room where all the chains and whips and weird sexual stuff happens.
Yeah. Hilarious.
Which, again, hilarious for the kids.
So they're cleaning up the house, and Mikey discovers a treasure map in the attic. Mm. His father is obsessed with all this. He has all this pirate paraphernalia, and he's obsessed with the legend of One-Eyed Willie. Again, a very Spanish-sounding pirate name.
Listen, One-Eyed Willie was a pirate. He could have boarded a Spanish galleon and taken it. Who knows?
Okay, fine.
So but they find all this paraphernalia.
Local Mikey's... legend has it that One-Eyed Willie's ship is buried somewhere in the town, and it's full of jewels and rubies and sapphires and all this. So
yeah. We should probably explain, when we say this movie is just a rush, like all this is established within a 5-minute window.
Yeah, which is why I'm surprised you're giving so much credence to it. You're like, let me explain. Hold on. This gets complicated, guys.
Yeah, so when this movie just lives in the moment, it strictly like it sets up the legend of One-Eyed Willie and this whole history of stolen booty,
mm-hmm.
hidden somewhere on the sea cliffs of Astoria, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And then finding this map, and then Mikey imploring everybody that this is our time, if you want to talk about an empty platitude.
Wait, so does he say that in the attic?
No, he doesn't say that in the attic.
Yeah, he only says that once, and that's like halfway through the movie, right?
Yeah. Well, I think he says it once more out on the porch or something like that.
Okay, so that confused me because he says it halfway through the movie, and it seems like one of those triumphant lines that again feels like a setup and payoff, like he said it earlier in the movie, and but I don't remember him saying it earlier in the movie, so it just seems like an empty platitude midway through the movie.
Yeah, and it is.
Don't you realize? The next time you see Sky, it'll be over another town. The next time you take a test, it'll be in some other school. Our parents, they want the best of stuff for us. But right now they gotta do what's right for them. Cause it's their time. Their time. Up there. Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here. That's all over the second we ride up Troy's bucket.
That's the reason. I mean, yeah, he has to motivate his friends to go on this adventure with him.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they're skeptical. They explain in the moment because there's very little going on before or after the film. What little setup or backstory they do say is that, oh, Mikey, you always say let's go on these adventures or something like that, and they never turn out the way we expected them to. So then, now they're skeptical of the Legend of One-Eyed Willy.
Mm-hmm.
But he implores them, like, no, before our houses get torn down, to make room for a golf course in rainy Oregon, the perfect place for golf.
And the people buying up all the homes, they're just, you know, they're so nuanced. They're so sophisticated, you know. These people with fedoras and rain jackets, like, sign so we can steal your house and knock it down.
John, come on, it's a children's film.
Oh.
That happens to include implied hanging, dead bodies, and the other instance of the word shit about 20 times.
Yeah, they say shit like 10,000 times. Okay, so there is one little fun piece of trivia. Data at one point says holy S-H-I-T. He's the only character in the whole movie who doesn't say shit. And it's because he promised his mommy that he would never swear on camera, which I thought was kind of cute.
Yeah. Another piece of trivia I found, Josh Brolin was explaining this on the Conan show.
Mm-hmm.
When he was promoting another movie, they brought up like the 30th anniversary of Goonies or something like that.
What a milestone. He gave a little,
what?
What a milestone.
John, you are just bringing the fire today.
I don't like this movie.
But he explained that Richard Donner didn't want to show the big pirate ship. Spoiler alert, they do find a giant pirate ship along the One-Eyed Willy.
Wait, you're telling me the treasure's real? You're telling me at the end they didn't discover that the true treasure was friendship?
No, because that would be a lesson to be learned at the end, which we don't learn. But he explained Richard Donner wanted to get their genuine reactions, the kids' genuine reactions of seeing the ship for the first time when it is revealed. And at that moment, they reveal it to the kids, and completely off the cuff, Josh Brolin said, holy shit, and they had to reshoot it because he swore. I'm like, wait a minute, they say that 80 other times in the movie. Like, why did they cut it out then?
Maybe the holy shit didn't capture the essence of it. Maybe it was more like a dry, like, holy shit.
Yeah, this was Josh Brolin's first on-screen performance, who knows.
Yeah.
But, we should probably explain the kids abscond. they get away from older brother Brand.
Yeah, so Josh Brolin's character is tasked with babysitting these kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids kind of run off to go on this little adventure and find this treasure, and Brand has to kind of chase them, and he gets wrapped up in this adventure as well. And while he's chasing them, he runs into a few school friends. One is his crush.
Her name's Andy.
Mm-hmm. Andy. And her friend Steph, who looks exactly like Barb from Stranger Things.
Don't you like it? Give them applause because they recognize something from pop culture from the 80s that you enjoy too. So
yeah, exactly.
I will say, Steph, I identified with the character of Steph because she's the only one skeptical of this whole enterprise.
Yeah, she's the naysayer.
Yeah. She gets wrapped up in this whole Goonies adventure.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably explain, they're called the Goonies because these are the Goondocks of Astoria, Oregon.
Yeah, the movie doesn't do a good job explaining that.
No, they don't.
Yeah. So they end up at this abandoned restaurant, which is kind of the first spot of finding the treasure.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turns out, this is the hideout of the three villains we met earlier in the film.
Yes.
Our primary antagonists.
Mm-hmm.
Who, for lack of a better term, I'm just going to call them the Three Stooges, because they're working on the same comedic level.
Pretty much, yeah.
you know, the matriarch of the family is constantly slapping her two boys.
She's the Mo, yep.
Yep. And one is constantly singing opera because they're Italian, hey! And Joey Pants doesn't have enough to do, sadly.
No. Well, he gets to utilize his slapstick skills that he employs later in Baby's Day Out.
And The Matrix.
Yeah. That's what The Matrix was missing.
Exactly. And more slapstick.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a 360-degree slapstick move? Like,
yeah. When he's on a balance beam, he falls and he hits his crotch. That happens both in The Goonies and in Baby's Day Out. Or Joey Pants.
Kids movies. Mm-hmm. We're watching them for this podcast for some reason.
John, come on. We're reevaluating classics here.
This isn't... Okay. Let's just keep going. Let's just keep going. Barrel through. Anyway, you can tell whose idea it was to watch this movie. That's all I'm going to say. They run into the villains who are making fake money out of the basement of this thing.
Yes, they're running a counterfeit money operation.
Yeah, which is a dumb plot point that goes nowhere.
Even dumber is the fact that they see two people enter the restaurant but don't leave. Mm-hmm. And it turns out they have murdered these two men.
Which... why is this included besides the fact that, you know, it's like, oh, there's a dead body here. Steaks! You know, why include
the
dead
bodies? I know,
they
should be life... Yeah, it should either be just a fun, light adventure that's not... a lighthearted adventure that's not life or death. Mm-hmm. Or apply it in a perilous way. Not with criminals.
The only reason for the dead bodies in this movie is so that Chunk can see them and go like... and mug for the camera.
Yeah. In such an endearing way.
Yeah. And then we're also introduced to Sloth, the third brother, mm-hmm. who is malformed and mentally challenged.
I wouldn't say mentally challenged. I think just physically handicapped.
He's feral. They basically keep him chained up in the basement, so he's kind of feral and ugly. Yeah. And the only reason he exists is for a third act, you know, heroic moment.
Yeah.
Because, again, he has no bearing on the plot whatsoever throughout the whole movie until the very end when he comes and, like, fights his own family as a moment of redemption, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to double-check because one of the interesting things about the film Silence of the Lambs is that Hannibal Lecter is only on screen for a total of 16 minutes. Mm-hmm. I bet you Sloth, one of the elements of the movies people most like about The Goonies, is probably on screen for less than that.
But that's the thing. It's like, why... I can understand why people connect with Hannibal Lecter. That's a great role played by a great actor. Why do people care about Sloth so much?
I think it's in the moment.
All right.
I think it's to see because he's introduced from behind. He looks monstrous. Mm. He's bellowing. You know, he's like a feral creature. Mm-hmm. So to see him later to be a lovable hero is interesting and endearing, I guess.
Because it's a kids movie, so we need like the E.T. kind of thing, I guess. I don't know, like the little sidekick.
Yeah.
I hate this movie.
John, I can't play. So, John, okay, this is when the movie really takes a downturn, like a literal downturn, where it's always like, find the next clue, go deeper into a cave, and deeper into a cave, and deeper into a cave.
And so the adventure set pieces were all these booby traps set up by One-Eyed Willie to protect his treasure. But the amount of effort and engineering required for these ridiculous booby traps is insane. And again, only, like, never
Wait,
justifies
Wait, are you challenging
itself.
The logic of a film in which a Spanish galleon is hidden in the cavern?
I guess you're right. But again, it's like, if the movie was better made, I would buy it.
Or yeah, maybe if you were more emotionally invested.
And more emotionally invested. And if it didn't make up the majority of the movie. I think that's the other thing that kind of bothers me.
Well, yeah, I don't like this because, when we say it's always living in the moments, there are no act breaks in this movie.
No, it's just constantly going. It's just chugging along.
It's chugging along, and here is when I really got annoyed because we don't see sunlight for... Like, it's all just these kind of artificial-looking caves.
Yeah, it's all, like, these crappy reproductions of, like, the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
And maybe that's unfair to judge a 30 to 40 year old movie on production design, and now we're watching it in HD and we could see, oh, the makeup appliance on Sloth isn't exactly believable, is it? You know,
I mean, no, it's not just that. It's just it takes up too much screen time. Like, you know what it reminded me a lot of? It reminded me of the climax of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Okay.
Because they go through this similar thing where they're trying to get to the Holy Grail and they have to go through this gauntlet, this booby-trapped cave. Mm-hmm. And it's a little ridiculous, you know, like all these booby traps that have set up, but it's only like the last 10 minutes of the movie. So it kind of it comes and goes. And the other thing that bothered me is like, oh, it's this huge gauntlet, but then the bad guys go through it like no problem, just so they can catch up with the guy.
Or they establish it earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
They establish that, hey, you're going to encounter booby traps. You want to know what else? Indiana Jones is going through them to save his father.
That's
so
true.
You're emotionally invested in seeing Indiana Jones mm-hmm. go through these booby traps and go through these challenges to get an earnest result in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Here, mealy-mouthed Sean Astin, God bless him. Just explains, like, this is our time, and, you know, let's go on an adventure. Like, there's no... So there's not enough stakes, there's not enough emotional interest to keep you invested. And I think that's why, yeah, just the emptiness of it, I think that's why you're reacting so viscerally. Not only how empty this movie, but also how highly it's praised by people of a certain age.
I mean, that's the thing, it's like, you have the foreclosure subplot, which is meant to be the inciting incident and the motivating factor. But it's also like, oh, we're kids and we're supposed to go on adventures and that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So it's like, if it actually kept up with the whole, you know, if you're right, if there were any stakes that it's like, oh no, all of them are going to move apart and they're not going to be friends anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing too is like, these kids are so annoying. I don't care if they ever hang out again. If anything, I don't like them hanging out now. And also, you know, the Goonies, the core four Goonies, Mikey, Mouth, Data, and Chunk, you know, they're the only four that really care. And then Brand and the two girls kind of come along and they're, you know, they earn the title of, you know, Goonies themselves. And it's like, who cares? I don't.
Yeah. Hal, I mean, if the characters have any arc, I guess it's Brand and Andy falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Oh, but then we get that really creepy, weird moment in the cave.
Yeah, so they've just survived a perilous booby trap where they all could have died.
It's one moment where it slows down for 2 seconds and it turns into this really creepy moment.
Yeah, they've just escaped a perilous booby trap. You know, they've just escaped with their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Andy decides, oh, this is the perfect time. As you said, it slows down a little bit. This is the perfect time to court Brandon and, you know, get our Mac on.
Wait, did you say so Brandon?
What?
Did you say Brandon?
Well, yeah, it's his full name, Brandon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't want to say Brand just sounds weird.
Okay. I'm so thrown
off. I will continue to call Sean Astin's character Mikey, because that's appropriately annoying.
Okay.
It's just, Brand just sounds weird, yeah.
I didn't even think about what Brand could be short for. I was just like, that's weird. That's just a weird way to say Brad, but okay.
Yeah. But anyway, it's dark and shadowy, and Mikey unknowingly like enters the room,
mm-hmm.
and that's when Andy grabs and kisses him.
Mm-hmm.
And so she says, wait a minute, Brand, you don't have braces.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, throughout the rest of the movie, she's convinced that she did kiss Brand there. And in spite all the evidence to the fact that Brand clearly does not have braces, she's not clued into the fact that she did not actually kiss Brand.
Exactly.
Wrong way, lover boy. It's this way.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. You kissed. Now tell.
There's something weird.
What? What is it?
Does Bram wear braces? Why are you laughing? Steph, it was beautiful.
Next time you kiss him, do it with your eyes open. It's a whole different experience.
Be careful around here. There's a hole, I think. I think Bram was standing in it.
And so these characters are too stupid to live.
Too stupid to care about.
Yeah.
And it's
that
weird.
Too. So they're not endearing or charming in any way.
And again, it's brought back in the climax where Brand finds out that she kissed his brother. And it's just like, oh, played for laughs. It's like, no, that's creepy. He's like 10.
John, enlightened times. I can see how... No, maybe in the past. That wouldn't be seen as some kind of, you know, weird assault situation.
Exactly.
And hey, she initiated.
That's true. That's
if anything, it's her fault.
I know. Oh, great. If anything, it's her fault.
Yeah, it's all the woman's fault.
Okay, so there's this other moment with Andy. They're going through all these stupid booby traps. And there's one moment where they set up this complicated keyboard.
Yeah, this one, and you've mentioned earlier, straining credulity in terms of the amount of effort.
They set up this complicated keyboard where you have to play the exact notes.
It's not, John, it's not just a keyboard, it's an organ.
Yeah, it's like a working organ made of bones.
Yeah.
And they have to literally play the right notes or else the floor is going to collapse underneath them.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, all payoff, no setup. She's like, I play piano, and then she has to know the right notes. It's like, but we had no setup to the fact that she plays piano.
It would have improved the movie if she was like, oh, like out on the road shirking her responsibilities, and then get caught up in this adventure, and she's like, oh, now I have to learn piano to save my life.
Exactly. Or maybe in that first montage of the car chase, you know, we see her like fiddling on the keys, not enjoying herself or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, again, setups are important, people.
But John, why? Is it to get you emotionally invested in the cleverness of the story?
Yeah, and so your story beats feel earned.
Yeah. Instead of them just throwing them at you at a at a reckless and annoying pace.
So they eventually get to the ship.
I could see you were excited at this point.
Oh yes. I was just like, oh, thank God, it's almost over. They find the
ship.
This
movie's long, by the way. Yeah, this movie feels endless.
Yeah. It's only 90 minutes.
It's constantly
minutes.
On Sugar Rush. Yeah, it feels endless.
So they finally get to the treasure ship. And again, the bad guys have caught up with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go through all these perilous traps, but the adults just kind of get through them no problem, I guess. Because we need a climax.
Yeah, the Italian crime family is chasing after them.
Mm-hmm. So they get aboard the ship, they start gathering up their treasure, and then there's a scuffle, and then Chunk and Sloth come in to save the day.
After taking an hour break from the movie.
Exactly.
The crime family, we should say Chunk gets left behind.
Yeah, so Chunk is conscripted into going to tell the police.
Mm.
But the problem is Chunk has a reputation of being a bit of a boy who cried wolf. So when he does end up calling the police...
Yeah, which is obviously set up and paid off later.
Yeah, exactly. So when he does call the police, you know, they don't believe him. And he gets captured again by the crime family. And there's actually, I did enjoy the blender scene. I thought that was pretty funny.
When he's just confessing.
Mm-hmm. And so he ends up getting stalled in the same cell as Sloth. And so they kind of form a bond. And again, I guess it's assumed that they go through the same gauntlet of traps, which apparently is no problem for them, but, you know. And so they come in and save the day, and, you know, they do like a little Errol Flynn fight thing, like dun 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 dun, and you know,
which we should say is actually set up in earlier, because in the cell they have for Sloth, mm-hmm. he's chained up, but they have, to placate him, they have a TV
mm-hmm.
that's playing old Errol Flynn pirate movies.
Yes. And Sloth is wearing a Superman t-shirt for no other reason than to have a little shout out to Richard Donner.
Yeah, reference the fact that Richard Donner directed two Superman movies. Well, one and a half, really, but yeah, who's counting?
There's also a little Gremlins riff, but that's not important.
Yeah, which was written by Christopher Columbus. Listen, as long as the people behind the movies are having a good time. As long as the people behind the cameras are having a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what matters.
Who cares about the audience, right?
Yeah.
I enjoy a movie more when I know they were miserable.
Yeah. They're getting their nutrition.
That's why I loved Fitzcarraldo so much. I was like, they worked for it. They earned it. With their malaria. So, and it's a dumb scene because, again, they like almost make them walk the plank, but then to save themselves, they jump overboard anyway.
Yeah, they make them walk the plank to fall into like a 3 foot deep pool,
mm-hmm.
which they can easily survive out of.
And there's this other kind of, there is one setup and payoff. They find these candles earlier in the, you know, in the dark, dark cave. And mm-hmm. this moment, they finally actually light them. Turns out it's dynamite.
Yeah, so there's a... They say, oh, look, candles, you know, mm-hmm. as any 10-year-old would be excited to see candles. And there's a little musical sting. You see one is clearly labeled dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was going to pay off sooner. This is about 40 minutes earlier.
Yeah, this is the most obvious Chekhov's gun imaginable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so eventually they light the dynamite. You know, they realize it's dynamite and they throw it, and it, you know, the cave starts collapsing because it explodes, and they, I don't even remember how they get out. They just kind of like swim out.
Yeah.
And they swim to the beach, and the police and all their families are waiting for them there.
Well, I think some time has passed.
Yeah.
I think some time has passed because it's two cops on ATVs on the beach. Mm-hmm. It looks like sunrise, and the kids are obviously all wet and in their clothes. When the families and the news reporters do come by, they're in warm rescue gear, I should say.
That's true. Yeah, they've dressed them and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I guess there should be some passage of time. But John, wouldn't you know it? They don't get away with the treasure, which I thought they would. You know, this being an '80s film.
Well,
all that matters is you get paid.
They kind of do.
Yes, they do get away with some treasure.
Mm-hmm. They get away with enough treasure to pay off the home loans and not get foreclosed on their house.
Yes. The news reporters hails them as heroes. Yep, now they're friends for life, and mm-hmm. So long.
Well, and the other annoying thing is, again, like, all payoff, no setup. Every little kid gets, like, a moment with their families.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time we've ever seen the families. We meet Data's parents, and it turns out Data's father is like a kooky inventor just like him, and he says, like, you're my best invention. And it's like, okay.
Again, a sweet line, but also completely completely empty and arbitrary thrown in at the very end of the movie.
Completely superfluous, because again, we have no idea what their relationship was like up until this point.
Yeah. We get to see Mikey and Brand's father,
mm-hmm.
who we saw for 30 seconds earlier in the movie. He just waved at them.
We get to see Chunk's family, and they brought him a pizza, because get it, fat kid.
Yeah. Everyone laugh at the fatty. Laugh at him.
He's inferior to you.
Yes. In so many ways.
But it turns out they did get away with getting a bag of rupees and precious stones. So that's enough. And just before he's about to sign the foreclosure paper, it's revealed that they have this. And it's like, oh, we can pay off. And he rips up the piece of paper and throws it in the air. This final scene is actually a lot, like, directed with a lot of strange angles and stuff like that. Like, a lot of low and high angles. It's very strange.
Well, they're trying to cram so many characters into frame.
That's true.
That's like, the challenge they have.
We have, like, he's holding out the rupees, but it's shot from underneath, so all the characters kind of, like, peer down to it, like they're looking into a well. And then when he tears up the mortgage papers, he, like, throws it up in the air, and it falls like confetti. It's I don't know.
Yeah, that's a weird angle, yeah. When you talk about sensation, I also wanted to call this Dolly in the movie.
That's cause it was
because every little trap, there's always this like little push in.
That's because it was directed by, or it was produced by Spielberg.
Yep.
Got to do those push ins.
Yep. So we dolly in on the elaborate organ.
Mm-hmm.
We dolly in on the like every other character and everything else. Yeah.
Which is fine in the beginning, but again, it's got to be used sparsely, or else it loses all effect.
Yeah, they do it on everything.
Exactly.
There is one other scene where it slows down.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, in the trivia, it said that Steven Spielberg directed at least one scene in this movie, and I think I know what scene that is.
Oh, yeah?
It's when Mikey gets deep into the bowels of the ship and finds One-Eyed Willie and his whole treasure laid out.
Yeah.
I guess his captain's quarters is where he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually starts speaking to a skeleton of One-Eyed Willie.
And he looks underneath the eye patch, and there's still kind of evidence of an eye there, or like mm-hmm. a scar there or something.
If you're trying to find some emotional resonance in this film, I guess it's him trying to connect with the past or something. I don't know. But
it's also like,
again, I'm just glad that the film took a minute or so to slow down.
But it's also played as like a comedic set piece because, you know, he's talking alone with these pirates.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like he looks behind him and realizes all the kids were like listening to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a completely undercut for a laugh.
I mean, in terms of comedy, this is probably the most subtle moment of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, no one's screaming. No one's mugging. So mm-hmm. that's kind of nice. But yeah. Mm. Not enough to salvage this ship. This film is sunk. I did not like this movie.
I had a feeling.
And this was your idea. You made this happen. Shame on you.
You know what? I'm glad I saw it. And I could justify saying, all you 80s kids out there, you're wrong. The Goonies is a terrible, empty entertainment, not deserving of your praise.
Okay.
Yeah. See? Now we can justify it, you know?
All right. Fine. You're right. Now we can at least speak to it.
Yes. You can
I don't
speak
have to
it,
assume
yeah.
it's garbage anymore.
No. Again, you can't say how... You can't judge how hot the desert is unless you've actually been there.
That's
I know that's a weird analogy, but...
Sure.
I'm just, yeah, you can't judge how spicy food is unless you've eaten it. You know?
Again, got to bring it back to food metaphors.
Yeah, indeed, I do. Maybe that's why I hated Chunk so much. I see so much of myself in that character. Is Hey You Guys from something, or is that where this originated?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's Sloth who says it more than anybody else.
Yeah, well, it's his, like, catchphrase, but, like, where did it come from?
Yeah.
Like, why did he just utter it? Like, he doesn't even know these other people.
It comes from the electric company.
What?
It comes from the electric company.
Oh, maybe that's it.
But was he watching the electric company?
I don't know.
Maybe that was cut. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he says it like 9 times in the movie.
Yeah.
God, this movie is so poorly made.
Yeah, speaking of things that were cut, Data at one point mentions the octopus was scary. And I'm like, what octopus? And it turns out there's a cut scene when they first arrive in the pirate ship. There's an octopus in the little covered lagoon they're in.
Yeah.
But that was completely cut from the movie.
So why
did you include it in that final scene?
And it would have been, again, scary. Like, they should have included that because, again, when they walk the plank, like, there has to be some stakes on why, you know, going into the water is a bad thing. But again, they jump overboard immediately when they're in danger, so.
Yep.
Ugh. Yeah, not good. Poorly executed. D minus.
Oh, wow. Harsh.
Okay, not that bad, but I don't give letter grades, okay? Because I'm a sophisticated critic, all right?
Smart.
Yep. I'm like A.O. Scott over here. A.O. Scott doesn't give star reviews.
Nope. He's one of my favorite reviewers.
Do
you have a favorite like movie reviewer you like to read every week?
You know who I should read but never have gotten the chance? Is it Pauline Kael?
Yeah, so Pauline Kael was the most prominent film critic. She was the New York Times film critic.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the 70s and early 80s. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, she was a bit of a grouch.
Yeah.
She hated everything and
okay.
Had impossibly high standards.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally don't like her.
Okay.
Who I thought was more deeper for the time, kind of the Siskel to her Ebert, I guess.
Well, maybe that's the thing. Maybe.
Although, yeah, they should be switched. I mean, Ebert was more kind of a forgiving, you know, homely guy.
Well, Ebert, yeah, people forget this about Ebert, but Ebert definitely enjoyed the spectacle, and it was always Gene Siskel who was kind of the fuddy-duddy, like, erudite, like,
Yeah, Yale-educated, you know, elitist city dweller.
Ebert was the one munching on popcorn, just going like, yes.
Well, yeah, if we could simplify it to that, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe that's the problem with Pauline Kael. She needed somebody to kind of bounce off of who, you know, genuinely got caught up in the movie magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't quite Andrew Saris was the number two most noted film critic, but he was a lot more academic. Like, he would speak more to theory and critically what a movie is doing.
Gotcha. So I was this is completely unrelated, but it's kind of funny. I was watching a video about the movie Willow. Do you remember the movie Willow?
Yes.
There's a villain named Kael. And then there's a two-headed dragon who's not named, but in the production it was meant to be named after Siskel and Ebert.
Okay.
This was a movie produced by George Lucas, by the way.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, she probably would have hated that those frivolous space adventures.
And these silly fantasy worlds.
Yeah. Now that reminds me, John, in the 1998 remake of Godzilla, you may have missed a subtle reference to Siskel and Ebert.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, because there's a Mayor Ebert who always gives a thumbs up, and there's his ineffectual assistant George. Mm-hmm. Again, very subtle. You may have missed it, but
you know, movies are just so hard to make, and so when people like us shit all over them, I guess it can be hurtful.
Yeah. We're not shitting all over. Again, I tried to find the nuggets of corn in this turd that was the Goonies.
Oh, you're gross.
Nice. Yeah. Anyway, let's get off the Goonies.
Yes, let's talk about something we did enjoy.
In the way we end every, I gotta start that over.
Yeah, where were you going with that?
in the way that which we end every episode.
Yes.
which is called Spotlight.
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 It's time, Robbie. It's time.
I'm going to keep that in, by the way.
I know you are, and it annoys me.
That line reading is
going to be suffering here.
The way we end every episode.
I'm suffering. Bro, what do you have for Spotlight? Quick. I'm not going to make it.
So, me and you actually went to the theater recently.
Oh, yeah.
And this was my suggestion.
Yeah, we're supposed to speak to this, shouldn't we?
Well, I mean, I don't want to overtake your Spotlight, whatever you had planned.
I didn't have anything good, so okay. Don't worry about it.
All right. Well, we saw this is another recent release.
Yes, recent releases.
We went to go see Colossal.
Yeah, the new film starring Anne Hathaway.
Mm-hmm.
Jason easy for me to say. Jason Sudeikis.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Blake Nelson.
And directed by Nacho... can't remember his last name.
The director of Time Crimes, I guess, is his claim.
What is Time Crimes?
It is a French movie. You know, people liked it, so.
Okay. I've never heard of this guy until I heard about Colossal.
Did I say French? Maybe it's Spanish. I don't know.
His first name is Nacho Greg, so yeah, I'm pretty sure it's French.
I know, but he's making a movie in America.
All his movies are Spanish, Greg. Come on.
Maybe you're right. Let me look up Time Crimes here. Nacho Vigalondo.
Nacho Vigalondo.
Yes.
Yes. A French man, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Yeah. And Time Crimes is a Spanish movie. I don't know why I thought it was French. maybe I was thinking of Time Out, which is a movie I have
No,
seen.
You're thinking of Time Cop with Jean-Claude Van
Damme. Time Cop, yeah. Anyway, he's an interesting director, and mm-hmm. Colossal's an interesting movie.
Yes. So,
why don't you explain the premise?
I had heard about this film a few years ago when it was first starting production, because it was getting sued by Toho Productions, the company that produces the Godzilla films.
Yep.
And the premise is Anne Hathaway is a woman who is a colossal mess.
Good one.
Yeah. She is a bit of an alcoholic.
The colossal, maybe in the movie sense.
Mm-hmm.
In that she's got a great big landing pad and a home that her parents don't occupy.
Well, so it's implied that she is suffering from a bit of alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have a job. She's kind of having trouble getting her life together. So she moves home to kind of get things sorted out. Her boyfriend has kicked her out of her apartment. So, and it turns out that at 8:05 every morning when she walks across a certain park, usually while she's drunk, stumbling home, a giant monster materializes over Seoul and crushes everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out there's a connection here where she actually controls the monster, inadvertently at first, until she discovers and does a little testing. I love the early scenes where she's kind of like figuring out if this is actually true. She does like these weird hand gestures in the middle of the park to like see. And then she looks at the news footage later and the monster's doing the exact same hand motions and she's freaking out.
Yeah. It's shocking. It's in spite of that weird premise, it's actually very believable.
Mm-hmm. Because it's treated with, again, stakes.
Yeah.
She's horrified at this implication because inadvertently she's accidentally killed hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's like a goofy fantasy story, you get a sense that, you know, there's some real consequences here.
Yeah.
And she ends up striking up a quasi relationship with a childhood friend of hers played by Jason Sudeikis. Yeah. Easy for me to say. Jason Sudeikis.
Yes, they're both childhood friends.
Mm-hmm.
He owns a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Again, complicating her or exacerbating her alcoholism.
Yeah.
Again, they kind of strike up a room. Initially, they're amicable.
Mm-hmm.
But as the film goes on, we see some things come to light from their past.
Yeah.
Which caused a lot of acrimony in their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
As well as with their friends, played by Austin Stowell and Tim Blake Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Which don't really have a lot of bearing in the plot, sadly. I would have liked to see more of them.
No. We should say, as it goes along... we're just going to spoil the rest of the movie. I should say our overall impression of this film is good.
Yes.
This is a fine film, a great, unique, independent film.
Mm-hmm. With a great premise and a great internal logic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a movie involving giant monsters, you know, it plays by its own rules.
Yes. But the drama of the film comes in when Jason Sudeikis learns he enters the park at the same spot and he materializes in Seoul as a giant robot.
Mm-hmm. So when Gloria, Anne Hathaway's character, and Jason Sudeikis' Oscar kind of again have a falling out and kind of start having this domestic dispute, it materializes in this gigantic monster fight over Seoul.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the giant monsters fighting as a metaphor for their domestic dispute.
Yes, and colonial speaking could have an effect on a foreign nation.
Many levels. So, this movie's
operating.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of there's a lot of levels there. There are some things I didn't like about the plot machinations, because you really don't come to like Jason Sudeikis's character.
Well,
later
I mean,
in the film, and he appears very unstable.
It's a good progression for him, because again, at the very beginning of the movie, he's a very nice guy.
Yeah,
but then you soon kind of realize that he's a nice guy because he expects to get something out of you. He's very controlling. And almost the biggest fault of the movie is maybe it goes a little too far and it kind of pushes him into psychotic territory.
Yeah, that's what I didn't like. You seem to be more forgiving of that, but I...
No, what I like is the fact that, you know, it sets up this character and you kind of understand it until it goes too far. Like, it just goes a little too far with the character. Okay. The character is straight up abusive.
Yeah, straight up abusive, does some things, again, that really strain psychology. Like, you wonder why is he going to this dark place? And maybe if he was characterized a little bit more, like maybe if he was seen as an alcoholic on the level of Gloria's character, or maybe if he was suffering from the same alcoholism as Gloria, we could kind of justify these actions and see how their addictions are also manifesting in this fight half a world away.
I mean, he does clearly have a drinking problem.
Yeah,
like he's up at 8 o'clock at the same, you know, drunk at the same time as she is. Yeah. I guess the biggest problem with this movie is also no police presence. These people are drinking and fighting out, you know, early in the morning. And
yes, in full view of kids walking to school.
And no one's the wiser.
Nope.
But yeah, I think it's a great movie. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. I thought it was a well-made film. Obviously, not perfect, but yeah, very interesting, and it's probably worth your time.
Well, I was
at least
really...
rent it if you can't see it in theaters. I mean, because there's there's some impressive kind of monster effects.
Yeah, I was really sold on the ending. I guess I think that's what really kind of solidified it for me, because it's a clever twist given the premise. Like again, the giant monster fight is a metaphor for this domestic dispute, and the way she kind of solves it. Spoiler alert, she triumphs at the end. It is a nice kind of subversion of that.
Yeah. So yeah, very well done.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. I don't know. I feel like maybe sometimes I enjoy movies when I see them on the big screen a little bit more than I would if I viewed them on a TV. But
well, definitely. Well, yeah, I definitely feel that way too.
That's why I hated The Goonies. I watched it on TV. I should have seen it in the theaters.
Yeah.
And also, I was 4 years old and brain damaged.
Ow, John. Okay, that was harsh.
That was a little mean. I apologize.
Yeah, I know. Hashtag 80s kids aren't brain damaged. Okay. As much as they may have been addled by Coke and Pop Rocks and terrible fashion and Cyndi Lauper, you know, we can't begrudge them for that.
No, we can't. We're all products of our time.
Yes.
Speaking of products of our time, social media.
Yes, we are on all the platforms.
Why don't you like our Facebook page? Why don't you follow us on Twitter?
Our MySpace page, our Bebo page. We're on Friendster now.
We're on Tinder. We're on Grindr. We're on Tumblr. We're on Bumbler.
We're on Plenty of Fish. We're on OurTime.com.
FarmersOnly.com.
Find us everywhere. We aspire to dates.
And then you can also like and subscribe through your podcasting service of choice.
Mm-hmm.
We're on iTunes.
Our podcasting service of choice, I think, is iTunes, because that's the biggest thing.
You know what's weird? People have started calling it Apple Podcasts. I don't know
Apple
if they're
Podcasts.
Slowly rolling out a rebranding thing, but yeah.
Okay.
So look us up on iTunes / Apple Podcasts. I don't know.
Leave us a review there. We hope you enjoy
this
episode. Thank you very much for listening.
And it helps people find us if you leave us a good star review.
And it creates a whole community of aspiring snobs.
Yeah.
We can recommend, discuss stuff. We can go back and forth. Why did you love The Goonies?
Yeah.
And we'll explain to you why you're wrong. If we haven't done already.
If you walk away from this podcast still thinking The Goonies is a good movie, well, we can't help you.
Yep. We did our best. You're just...
Well,
on that cheerful note.
Until next time, keep aspiring.